Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is non-XML data processing in WebSphere Data Power SOA appliances, style sheets. This is the first part of the two-part session. This covers basics and encoding. Today's presenter is Herman Sam Wilbrandt. Herman joined the IBM WebSphere Data Power team in April of 2007. Since September 2010, he is a permanent Level 3 support specialist for the XML compiler team and team lead for the FixPack team responsible for the worldwide Data Power FixPack process. He started blogging on Data Power XSLT in January of 2011. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Herman.
Thank you, Priti. Yeah, on today's call, I want to talk about non-XML data processing in WebSphere Data Power style sheets. Non-XML data processing in style sheets is only possible on Data Power as the handling of non-XML data is not possible with other XSLT processors. Slide number two, please. So today's agenda is the following. The first point will be on Data Power non-XML data processing. I want to distinguish what will be the topic of today's and the next week call and what will not be the topic. The next item is defining the stylesheet I/O for non-XML input and output of stylesheet data. Then we will talk about secure conversions of data inside the stylesheet and how to handle binary or non-XML data in the stylesheet. Then we will find the first two FFD types we will talk about today, hex binary and base64 binary, the easy ones. After that, we will talk about XML node types. There are seven node types by the XSLT specification. Data Power provides an eighth node type as an extension called binary node, which is very important to handle binary data here. Next, we will talk about the two SFD types, binary node and string, and where string is the type for text to XML conversion, like needed if you want to process HTML text, for example, which is not well-formed. Then we will show that the internal encoding of Data Power is UTF-8 and give some reasons why this is the case. And after that, a little tool, magnifying glass XSL, will be shown where you can inspect the internals of Data Power easily. If you don't like to provide additional FFDs like the four ones I talked about before, you don't need so, because you can use the one FFD already shipped on the stylesheet firmware. We will talk about that later. Then I will show you how to make good use of the probe in Data Power, especially the extension trace, which shows you if you are using a DPL open call to send or receive data, how you can inspect the data sent or received in the probe. Last but not least, I want to put focus on the safety of type equals string input mappings. In last year's webcast, I proposed an insecure method of accessing the content of a binary node, and I tried to correct that by today's and next week's presentation and make you aware that safety is very important and you need to take special actions to deal with non-UTF-8 data in a stylesheet. Finally, I will provide a little stylesheet validate UTF-8 input XSL, which makes use of the existing extension functions and provides a validation of data being UTF-8 and raising an error if not. Finally, in the section New Data Power Information Resources is important by pointing back to the webcast from last year, which already made use of the non-XML FFDs I will talk about today, and on the forum and all the other stuff. The next webcast, perhaps we will talk about a little bit after today's session, just as a little sneak preview, you see this little picture of the snowman. There will be a binary application which takes a bitmap file and converts it to an equivalent representation of the snowman, in this case, by making use of the Braille characters used normally for blind people. And the whole application, reading, processing, and outputting of the data is done in a style sheet in Data Power. Slide number 3, please. So here we want to tell what we are not talking about today and next week. You have 3 different possibilities to do non-XML data processing on Data Power. The first is make use of the WebSphere transformation extender for doing complete transformations. This is not what we are talking about today. The second is the use of the product, which was the only product until 2007, Contigo Analyst. That product provides such so-called flat file descriptor files, FFDs. And for Contigo Analyst mappings, the support from Data Power is only for FFDs generated by the Contigo Analyst tool normally, and there's no support for handcrafted FFDs, although many people are doing that because it's so easy, it's just a text file. This talk will be on different methods. It's 4 simple exceptional FFD types, and only these FFD types, which are no real mappings, but just calling of the Data Power conversion functions for conversion of binary data to hexadecimal, Base64, binary node, or string representation. These FFD types will be used in input, DP input mapping and DP output mapping for accepting input and generating output. Another method of accessing non-XML data in a style sheet is calling the dpulopen extension function, which can send data by in the post-like fashion, and it which can also receive data in a get-like fashion. For this talk, non-XML is considered as XML character text or as binary data. So sometimes we are mostly processing data which is just text consisting of XML characters, with just the elements, the text missing, and the other data is really binary data like the bitmap data from the snowman. Slide number 4, please. May we change to slide number 4, please?
Yeah, it's taking a bit of time. Get to the next one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's 5. We need 4.
Yeah.
Okay. This slide basically shows you all the methods of getting in and out non-XML data in a Data Power style sheet. The gray rectangle should be the representation of the style sheet itself. Inside the gray rectangle, the different encodings of data or non-XML data is given. Let's start on the bottom right. The string blah is just text. This text can be converted can be Base64 encoded, and you get the center string YMX blah blah blah. This Base64 encoded string can be converted to hexadecimal display shown in the top of the rectangle, and also it can be converted into a binary representation shown on the left side. On the left side of the rectangle, you see the DP input mapping with type FFD and an href It depends what you put into the href, which kind of non-XML mapping takes place. If you put in hex binary FFD, then the non-XML data will be converted to hexadecimal and put into some tags we talk later on for processing in the style sheet. If you put in string FFD, just some tags are surrounded and encodings are handled. As you can see on the left side, all the four special FFDs can be used for input, as well on the right side for the output in the DP output mapping of type FFD. In addition to the input and output of the style sheet, normally from a context in the policy of a data power service, you can use the DPURL open function in the style sheet itself. You provide a target, you give just a UI to where to go and to send data. If the URL open contains data, like in on the bottom, the dot 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 can be something, this data will be posted to the target address in HTTP post-like manner. If you just have an empty DPURL open, it will be a get-like retrieve of data. So on the top, it can be a post or a get, and the response data is returned to data power. If it's non-XML data, the only available mechanism to accept that is by stating response equals binary node. So the result of that would be a binary node, and you see it's the bit string representation on the left. On the other hand, if we want to send non-XML data out of data power, we can use DPURL open for doing so, and we can provide a data type. And if we put in the string base64 in the data type, then we have to pass the data to be sent in base64 encoded. That's because we cannot handle non-XML data in the style sheet, and by passing the data base64 encoded, the extended function gets the base64 encoded string, and before posting it to the external service, it will decode the data, but in the firmware, not in the style sheet, and then send the decoded binary data. On the other hand, you can also make use of data type XML. So if you have a normal XML character string, you can also post this with the data type XML. So data type XML does not require to have well-formed XML. It just requires that the data is consisting of XML characters. Slide number 5, please. So we have seen the four different representations of data, text, base64 encoded, hexadecimal, and binary. And here we want to talk about the secure conversions between the types. If we start on the bottom right part with blah, we can call the DP encode function with a second argument of type base-64. This will base64 encode a string of data consisting of XML characters. If we have a base64 string and we want to go back to the textual representation of it, we can use a DP decode function with the second argument base64. This function is very important, as we will talk later about that, that this DP decode does the validation that the base64 encoded string really is a UTF-8 encoded string, which is very important. So if we have a base64 encoded string, we can go to hexadecimal by calling the extension function dpRedixConvert. This function is a number function, so it's actually converting from a radix of 64 to a radix of 16. Interestingly, base64 data is considered as a number in the 64 array number system, although I don't know of any other number system which has padding characters. But it works, and works really good, and even with long strings. The other way around, if we have a hexadecimal string and we want to go back to base 64 encoded data, then we just call radix convert from the second argument 16 and third argument 64. Important, we will talk in the next back class, you also can convert, for example, from 16 to 10 to get the number value, which is really useful for some applications we will talk about in next webcast. So the third pair of conversion functions is if you have a base 64 encoded string and you want to have a binary node, this special data power extension type, then you have to call dp binary decode to get the binary node representation. And if you have a binary node and you want to get the base 64 encoded, you call the dp binary encode extension functions for that. These conversions are all secure, and the only one which feature which makes the conversion from base 64 to the textual representation secure is that dp decode does not let you decode non-UTF-8 strings represented by a base 64 encoding. Slide number 6, please. So here we will talk about the first of the four FFD types we want to talk about in this webcast, hex binary FFD. On the top right, you see the complete hex binary FFD. I just made a copy of the style sheet shipped with the appliance. We will talk later on, and modified it to match it from the documentation purpose. So this FFD we see here converts the input, the non-XML input, the binary input, or even XML input, to an XML tree as shown below. You have an object tag and in the an object element, and in the object element you have a message element, and in the message element the hexadecimal encoded data will appear. Important, while the comment says it converts the input into an XML tree, the FFD can be used in an input and an output mapping. So for all the four simple FFDs, which are okay to be used with the data power, we have two style sheets associated, in this case hex binary input XSL and hex binary output XSL. One, the input XSL uses it in the input mapping, and the output XSL uses it in the output mapping. That's the only difference. There's a little other difference. If you have an input mapping, you also have to tell what you want to do with the output. And I don't want to have an XML declaration in the output because the default of XSL output method is XML. So I just say omit XML declaration equals yes in this case. So let's start with the non-XML data in the middle of the slide. It's the word test. Essentially, it's not only test, but test and a new line character behind it. You don't see that. So if this non-XML data is processed by a transform binary action making use of hex binary input XSL on the left, then this string will be converted into the hexadecimal representation shown below. So you see object element, message element, and inside the message element, you see the hexadecimal representation. 7.4 is the code of the little t character, and 0A is the hex code of the newline character. So if you now have this XML object message and some hexadecimal data inside, and you call the hex binary output style sheets, then this object message element will be removed and the hexadecimal data will be converted back to the binary representation, and you will end up at test again. So if you would have a policy consisting of two transform binary actions, the first one referencing hex binary input XSL and the second referencing the hex binary output XSL, then the input would be converted to the object message XML representation, which will be passed in a context to the next transform binary action. Then the X binary output will take that XML data and convert it back to the binary data by extracting the hexadecimal value and decoding it. Slide number 7, please. So on slide number 7, it's nearly the same. The only thing is type is a little bit different. Now it's not hex binary, but Base64 binary. You see on the top right the FFD, Base64 binary FFD. The only thing which changed here is that we now get Base64 encoded data in the message, and the type is Base64 binary. Again, the test in the middle will be converted by hex binary input XSL on the left to the representation at the bottom. So object message and the Base64 encoded representation of the test with a new line. If we now pass this to the hex, to the Base64 binary output XSL style sheet on the right, then the object message will be removed and the Base64 representation DGV blah, blah, blah will be converted back to the test string. Slide number 8, please. Okay, now we have to talk about the new additional node type DataPower provides. So first let's talk about the 7 node types which are available in the XML, in an XML document by the specification. I've put in a sample XML file in the top right called 7 node types XML. So any of the available node types is present there, and we will talk about that. The first node type is the node you normally don't see at all. It's a so-called root node, and you can select it by the XParse expression slash. The root node has no name, and you cannot see it. It's the invisible thing which holds all the things together. As you might know, an XML document, a well-formed XML document, has only one document node, one node on the top level. In this case, for the sample here, it's a node E1. And as you see, above on the same level as E1, you have a comment and you have an XML style sheet, processing instruction. All this stuff needs to be hold together by something, and this something is the so-called root node. That's basically an invisible node on top of everything. So the element nodes, like E1 in this case, you can select all element nodes by the XParse statement /*. // is an abbreviation for discendent or self. And star selects all child nodes, so on the child axis. That's the reason why you do not get the root element by this XParse statement, because the root element is not a child of anything. The third type of XML is a text node. It can be selected by /text selector function. The fourth type, a sample of text in the document above, is the string XSLT in the E1 element. The attribute node type can be selected by selecting the nodes on the attribute axis. In XML, the axis is always specified by the name. In this case, the attribute axis, attribute colon colon, and we want to select every attribute, so we just select star. And with //, we select all attributes from all nodes in the document. So this XParse will select any attribute in the document. The only attribute in this sample document is the ATT attribute, which has a value of little a. The fifth node type is the namespace node. You can select all the namespace nodes in the document on the namespace axis, so // namespace colon colon star, select them all. The sixth node type is the the sample for namespace is the XML and S equals URN, ISBN something in the example. Here you can see that a namespace does not necessarily need to be a URL. It's a URI, and URI is much bigger than a URL. URL is HTTP something. As you can see here, the URN uniform resource notation allows, for example, to reference books by ISBN numbers. So, text node type is a processing instruction selected by the processing instruction selector function. Example in the document above is the XML stylesheet processing instruction on the second line of the sample. A processing instruction always begins with minus question mark and ends with question mark minus. And the seventh and last normal XML node type is the so-called comment, and you can select all comments by / comment selector left function. Comment in that sample is very simple. The comment opens with a content comment in the third line. So what DataBar provides is an additional node type different to all the others, and it's a so-called binary node. You can there is no specific selection function for it, but you can select the binary node by the selector function, which is able to match any node in the document, and that's the node selector function. The DataBar extension, and you can think of it as a container allowing secure storing of arbitrary binary data. So just let's talk about two little example application of XPath statements by the XPath++ tool. I talked about the XPath tool in last year's webcast, and it has upgraded to now XPath++ tool. You may look into the thread reference from last year's WSTE. The XPath++ tool allows to even apply data power extension functions, and is really useful. In this case, we want to apply the XPath / processing instruction selector function to the input document, the sample document, seven node types. And as you expect, the result is the extracted processing instruction, because we only have one processing instruction in the sample above. A little bit more interesting is the selection of the namespace nodes of the document. If you see on the bottom right, the XPath++ / namespace access selector function gives you two namespace nodes. And if you know, if you look in the sample, the XMLNS URN something is part of the XML document, of the sample document. So where does the XML namespace come from? That's very simple. Every XML document has an invisible, always defined XML namespace assigned, associated with it. So because every node has it, the extraction of the namespace access also shows it. There was nearly no documentation on binary nodes, and in the beginning of the year, I did a post thread on DeveloperWorks Data Power Forum on that, and that thread is referenced below. Slide number 9, please. So now we can talk about the binary node, FFD type. Again, the FFD looks very much the same as the others. The only thing which changed is in the message now you see binary data, and the type is binary node. Actually, you do not see binary data. There is binary data. What you see, if you try to output an XML document containing a binary node, that can you can see at the bottom of the page. So you see the object message, and then **, binary node, **. That's always the case. If you try to output a binary node, you always will get this text string. It's always the same. So binary node FFD is the file we just looked at, the top right. We can have no input and output style sheet here separately, because a binary node can only be used inside a style sheet. Data power context before or after an action in a policy cannot store binary nodes. So binary nodes lifetime is restricted to the style sheet lifetime. And in this case, we just have one style sheet demonstrating what's happening. It's a binary node XSL shown on the right. So if we start with the non-XML input test with a new line behind it and put it as input to this style sheet in a transform binary action, we see the DP input mapping referencing binary node FFD takes the non-XML data test and puts it into a binary node and wraps it in the object message elements. So we end up in the bottom representation. And now the style sheet does the following. It selects in the line where the XSL copy-off statement is, the object message node, XPath statement selects the binary node, just the binary node, nothing else. Then we copy that binary node and artificially add the object and message element around it. It's just here for demonstration how this works. You could just have said XSL copy of select equals apostrophe and select the whole thing you matched. But this is for demonstration purposes, and if you now have a construct object message and in the message a binary node, the DP output mapping takes the binary node, strips off the object and message element, and puts out the binary data of the binary node, which results in the PEST new line, as shown before. Slide number 10, please. So the last of the four types we use of is the FFD type string. There has been many posting over the years in the external and internal data power forum making use of this type. The most prominent use of it is to process, for example, HTML data, which is not well-formed. The well-formed form of HTML is so-called XHTML, and XHTML, you don't need any special means to deal with it. You can just input it as XML, but normal web pages are not well-formed, and in this case, you need to treat them as text. As you can see, this is a little different. There's an additional element, a syntax element in this FFD, which allows to specify an encoding. Because we have so many different encodings of data, example is a standard encoding of XML is UTF-8. There are others in European countries. There are ISO 88591 is very much used in Western European countries. I think the ISO 88597 is used in Greece, and there are different, 16 ISO 88859 variants. Then we have UTF-16, which is another representation of Unicode data. Then we have Japanese encodings. We have UCS2 and UCS4. UCS2 will be used in the next webcast in a sample. UCS2 is basically the basic multilingual plane, which means you taking the first 65,536 characters out of all Unicode characters. You only need 16 bits to address each and every entry, and exactly this 16-bit index is the UCS2 code. So even ASCII characters are now 2 bytes long, but you can address more than 65,000 different of them, all with the same length. So the FFD now has different encoding, so we need different FFDs of type string. And so the notation here on the left top is we have a string dot encoding dot FFD for showing the different encodings in a uniform way. And then we have a string colon encoding colon input dot XSL and an output XSL. In this case, we have the string UTF-8 input XSL and string UTF-8 output XSL on the right. It's correct. Let's start again with the input TEST and the new line corrector. It's converted by the string UTF-8 input XSL on the left, and we just copy the content, and the content is, after the conversion by the input mapping, what we see below, object message, and in the message, the textual representation of the input. And here is the first time that you really can see that there is a new line character behind the test, because the message tag, the closing tag of the message element, appears on the next line. So now, if you pass this object message test representation, which is XML, to the string UTF-8 output XSL, so you again get back the textual representation test of it. Slide number 11, please. Okay, now we come to the data core internal encoding. There is an internal coding, obviously. We need to normalize the different encodings. Otherwise, all we would do is encode and decode and convert code. And so what DataPore does is, by getting data in, it is converted once from the external encoding, which can be any encoding, to the DataPore internal encoding. Then all processing is done on the internal encoding. And finally, when sending the output, the serialization takes place, and the serialization does once the conversion of the internal representation to the output encoding. So the application shown here below is called Magnifying Glass ISO 88591 XSL. That's because it's using the string ISO 88591 FFD as an input mapping to convert the input in that encoding for processing. The sample input on the top, you see in the hexadecimal output line, it's a tool called OD, available under Linux or Unix or Cyclone if you are on Windows. It's a called octal dump tool. We don't want to have octal dump. We want to have hexadecimal output. So the option minus TX1 says we want to have every byte hexadecimally encoded. And now we say the file A, which is the German umlaut, .ISO 88591, should be displayed. And you see the first byte is E4 and the second is 0A. The E4 is the German A character and the 0A is the new line character. So we send this to the data power box by the curl statement and passing a.iso blah blah as the data binary argument to one of my data power boxes on port 2070, and on that port the style sheet is running, and the style sheet does the following. If you look below in the copy off line in start on the right, you see the dot, the input received by the input mapping is encoded by the DP encode function with the base64 argument. So we convert the actual converted A German umlaut to base64. Then we pass this base64 string to the DP radix convert function and convert the 64 to 16, so we get hexadecimal string, and we just copy out this hexadecimal string. And behind, below the curl line above, you see the output. The output is C3A4OA. The OA is a new line character, which is the same in most of the encodings, and the C3A4 is the internal encoding of the A character in data power, and if you look up the UTF-8 encoding, you will find out that the C3A4 is exactly the representation of the A character in Unicode, in UTF-8 encoding. Slide number 12, please. Yeah, this is the application magnifying.xsl. This is complete solution, which also covers corner cases. Let's start on the right top side with the style sheet itself. We get an input mapping. I've talked about that. It's the only FFD which is really shipped on any appliance. It's living in the store directory, and it's called PKCS7 Convert Input FFD. This is basically a type equals binary node FFD we can use to convert arbitrary binary data to a binary node representation on the input side, or from a binary node representation, we can use that FFD in an output mapping to get back the binary data for the output. So in this case, the input will be converted to the object message representation if you start in the lowest 9 dB binary encode of the select statement. You see the input select object message node selector function. We get the binary node, then we pass it to the DP binary encode function, the only function which can really work well on binary node, to get the Base64 encoding. And now we have to make sure that we don't lose any precision. The radix convert function is a number function, and any leading zeros are just stripped. So if you have a number 009, you know that's the same as the number 9. But if you want to stay with the zeros, we have to make sure that we prepend something which is not zero. And in this case, we do so by prepending a byte in hexadecimal encoding F0. We can do any byte which is not zero. In this case, I took F0. Now we have to use that byte in Base64 encoding. We can do easily by calling radix convert function for F0 from 16 to 64. So we get now the Base64 representation of this byte. And then we pass both arguments to the concat Base64 function, which just takes both Base64 strings, decodes them, concatenates the binary stuff, and finally Base64 encodes the result. We cannot just do a normal concat, because if the first Base64 string is not of length of a multiple, representing a string of a multiple of 3, then we have the padding equal sign characters, and that's the reason why we cannot use a normal concat function. So we use concat Base64, and after that we have a Base64 string consisting of our input with a prepended byte of F0, and then we just call the radix convert function from 64 to 16 to get the hexadecimal string. And now we want to output that string, but we don't want to see our artificially added F0, so we just thread it off by the substring function, and we start the substring at the third character of the string, because we know the first two characters are F0, because that's what we prepended first. And we just output that, and on the left side you see 4 sample files. Very important, in last year's webcast I pointed to all sample style sheets and sample data either by posting by links to postings, or I had an appendix section in the presentation. This time I made it more clean in having a zip archive containing all the style sheets and sample data, and this zip archive containing all the stuff is on the same website where you can find the presentation and the audio of this webcast. So you can just download it and use it and redo everything which is shown in this presentation. I verified that every file is there you need. So the 4 binary sample input files called test, TE3T, TE0T, and 0EST are shown just hexadecimally by the octodump tool. So you see test is just test with a new line corrector. TE3T is the same string, but the S is replaced by a non-XML character 03. The TE0T is the same, but we placed in a 0 byte at the first position. And the 0 EST is the same where we replace the first D character by a 0 byte. And if you now call the magnifying glass with the different input files, test, T3, T on, and whatever, we see the results. We don't deploy the style sheet on the data power box and then run it. We make use of a tool called CoProc2. We will talk in next webcast a little bit more on that tool. This tool allows to process XML and non-XML style sheets on the box by just sending the style sheet together with the binary or XML data to the data power box. The data power box extracts the style sheet and then executes it on the input and returns a response. So in the first line, you see the coproc call of test just returns test hexadecimally encoded. The second sample shows the TE3T correct. You see the fifth and sixth digit of the response is 03. The third line shows at the fifth and sixth position the 00. And the final line so shows that we also deal correctly with preceding zeros. So the 0 EST starts with a zero character, and you see zero, it starts with a 0065 and then the hexadecimal representation of it. This magnifying glass tool you can use wherever you like, and you can use it to identify issues in your data if you want to do so. Slide number 13, please. Okay, this is the same diagram as we have seen already in the beginning of the webcast, but this time we only have one type of input and output mapping. We already have seen it in action in the previous slides. It's so-called store PKCS7 convert input FFD, and we use it to convert non-XML input to a binary node representation on the left side in the gray rectangle, and to convert binary node representation to the output with the DP output mapping on the right side of the style sheet. Because of all the different errors still remaining, you can see that we don't lose much here. We can just use this shipped FFD to get a binary node representation. From there on, we can do a binary encode to go to Base64, then go to hex or text, whatever we want. And if we want to send output to the back end, we can just go back to the binary node representation, embed it in the object message elements, and then just have the binary output sent to the back end. So this is for making use of the style, the FFD already shipped on the box. In addition, use of this has a little advantage. You don't have to care on where you put your FFDs. If you have a style sheet on your box somewhere in the subdirectory if local, and you reference it relatively, then you have to make sure that your FFDs are on the same level. You can reference the FFD also by local colon // hexbinary.ffd, and then you only need to have the hexbinary FFD once in your application domain's local folder, but then you have the problem that you may want to use the same FFD in different application domains, so you need a visible domain, and the easiest way to do so would be to place the auxiliary style sheets, the four style sheets we talked about, in the store directory, because this is by default visible in any domain, at least if you create the domain with the web GUI. But on the other hand, best practice is not to put your own style sheets in the store directory, but to use local. But in this case, because they are really constant, not changing, it might be an exception you want to use. If you don't want to consider all this, just make use of the shipped style sheet. Always the same. It is there. It is there for all release branches and for all models and for all models which support binary data processing. So it's, for example, not existent on an XS40 because there the PKCS7 SMIME license is not available. Slide number 14, please. Yeah, that's what I talked about. That's using probe to debug execution. We have a service which is, let's start on the top right terminal. You see the curl statement. We send the German air umlaut sample file to a data power box, DP3L3, and to a service listening on port 2069, and we get back the object message and the entity 228, which is the decimal representation of E4, which is the air character. So you see here that the service which is installed on port 2069 is the string FFD, string ISO 8859-1 FFD as an input mapping, and it just gives you an output, the converted input. So the complete, because of the copy off, you get the object message and all that stuff. And below you can see again that the actual encoding of the input file, it's in E4 and an A for the new line. And now on the left side we see another sample style sheet, dp.xfl, which is available in the archive I provided. It makes use of the dpul open extension function to send the input data received to another service. And the input mapping here makes use of the shipped style sheet, so start PKCS7 convert input FFD. We get a binary node in the XSL value of line in the style sheet. On the right side, you see we select again slash object slash message slash node to get the binary node. We pass it to the DP binary encode function, get the Base64 representation of it, put this as the content of the DPL open element, with a target of localhost port 2068. I think something is wrong here. It should be 69. So I probably put in the wrong port number here. It should point to the other service we actually executed, and it makes use of the data type Base64, so the Base64 string we just passed in will be sent to the other service listening it's listening on port 2068. And on the top you'll see the screenshot of the probe, and you see the UL open extension function is called. The URL, the target, is 127.001.2068, and the response mode of this is XML path, because we didn't specify a response, the default is XML, and the request is a binary data string, you can see by the show binary link in the parentheses, and the write is an XML document returned. And you see, you can click on show notes. That what I did, I clicked on the show binary link, and what you see then is the window in the middle of the display, the view note set. It says binary content of request, and you see the E40A. So that's what is passed to the other service by the DPOL open function. Slide number 15, please. Only two slides to go, then we are done. Yeah, one word on the safety of any type equals string mapping. They are necessary for doing the input conversion of the encodings, but they are not safe. If we pass XML, we also validate that the input is valid. If we get ISO 8859 something encoding, everything is valid, because there are not everything, sorry. If you have a control character in it, a character of a code less than 32, then there are exactly three which are allowed in an XML document. It's the tab character 9, the new line character 10 and the carriage return character 13. Every other character is not a valid XML character. The validation that the input is actually consisting of XML characters is done by the XML parser. So if you pass in something which contains these characters, it will be rejected. That's not true for the string FFE, as you can see below. We pass in to the service the first sample, the AIR file, to the port 2068, and we get the response. And now we pass in another sample file, PE3T, file we already know, with the 03 character as a third, at the third position. And as you can see, the object message shows a TE and then a rectangle showing that there is some character which is not displayable. And that's not really good because we are now open to problems in display, in processing. We will talk in next webcast what all can go wrong if we would allow these bad characters to appear. The next two executions of COPROC 2 with the validate UTF-8 input XSL show that we have a means of dealing correctly with it, and the calling of the validate UTF-8 input XSL with the test file just outputs the test as an identity because that's valid. And if we pass in PE3T, we get an internal error because the validation fails. On the next slide, number 16, we can also see the reason why it fails. Yeah, you see the on the bottom the extract from the log on my box, and the message in the second entry of the log says, transform possible binary input with XSL results stored in output failed. Valid Base64 pass to DPD code resulted in non-UTF-8, and then the value of the Base64 string is shown. So if you pass in something and you get a rejection and say, no, that cannot be, then you will find in the log the Base64 string, which is the reason of the rejection. You can pass it to an external Base64 decode utility and find out what data pool is complaining about, and then you will find out exactly what is the reason of the rejection. So on the top right, you see the style sheet, validate UTF input XSL. It just reads the non-XML input by an input with the shipped style sheet, shipped FFD from the box. So we have a binary node. We select it in the binary encode line / object message node, pass it to the binary encode function, have a Base64 string, and pass this to the DPD code function with the argument Base64. And as I said, the DPD code function is doing the decoding and the validation. So if it's valid, you just get back the identity. If it's not valid, then you get a rejection. And that's what we need here. So slide number 17, please. As a summary, we talked about in today's webcast on non-XML stylesheet I.O. I think the diagrams are good to get an overview of the different kinds where non-XML data can enter a stylesheet on the input, on the output, or via DPUL OpenCore. We talked about secure conversions. We talked about that the internal encoding is UTF-8. And we talked about doing stylesheet non-XML I.O. based on the shipped FFD and safety on validation. That's all for today. Next webcast, next Thursday, will be on advanced techniques. There we will talk a lot more about encodings. And one specific point is very IBM popular encoding is a so-called AppStick encoding because it's the default encoding on IBM mainframes. While data power is able to create output in the AppStick encoding, you cannot directly process XML in AppStick encoding. It's no problem. The spec does only require two encodings to be read, and it's definitely known that you only can read a final amount of process the final amount of encodings. In next webcast, we will see how we can deal with that. In addition, we will see how to deal with non-UTF-8 data received and sent by DPUL Open, which is, may also be a problem. Then we have some sample applications, do real binary processing by, for example, expanding a 56-bit death key to a 64-bit representation by adding the parity bits, and finally show the Snowman application on shown on the agenda of this presentation. And this is where I want to hand over to Preeti again.
Thank you, Herman, for a great presentation. At this point, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no questions on the phone.
Okay. So thank you, Jackie.
One question on the chat. The comparison between FFD transformation and DPD code function, what is faster? And we will answer that next webcast, but the answer is simple. You can go to on two different, you have two different possibilities to get Base64 encoded input data. You can use a Base64 binary FFD, or you can use the shipped PKCS7 convert input FFD, and then do a DP binary encode of the binary node. And what turns out is that the Base64 binary FFD is only minimally more efficient than the other, and you can verify this by doing style sheet profiling and or timing analysis, and so there's not a big difference. The difference is if you will do conversion to hexadecimal, the hex binary FFD is quite more performant than going the binary node, DP binary encode, and the radix convert function.
Thank you, Herman. At this point, I don't see any more questions there. So we will conclude the presentation.